Welcome to QuakeCast, the podcast for id Software's classic Quake and the games it inspired.
Hello, Quakers, and welcome to another episode of the QuakeCast. Hey, Dubtruck, how you doing today, buddy?
Hey, I'm doing okay.
Great. We have a very special and entertaining guest today. I believe this is our first composer on the show, correct?
I think so, possibly.
And Andrew Holschult, who is who we have today. He is responsible for so many great games soundtracks over the past few years. Medieval, Dusk, The Rise of the Triad remake, and even Quake Champions.
So Andrew is not just hot right now. He's white hot. He's working on all kinds of great projects. Some he can talk about, some he can't. But he's going to explain how he worked on two different games at the same time, very different games. And then he composed a third game while he was working on those. So he's a machine, man. He's a machine.
He is a machine. He's super busy. And what else is cool is that he also is finding time in his busy schedule to still experiment with his soundtracks. So he's going to talk a little bit about that as well.
It's hard to remember what exactly got me kind of started with games like Quake and like the old id Software like base titles like Doom and Wolfenstein, but I do remember seeing Quake the very first time and being completely floored. It was at an EB Games in the Town East Mall in Texas, which I at the time I didn't know, but was literally just down the street from the big black cube that id was working at, like literally walking distance. My dad would always take me to EB Games and we'd always go check out, you know, all the titles and everything. And thinking about it now, it's like, oh my God, all those big boxes, I would kill to go back in time and buy all those. I remember seeing the shareware for Quake on the register, and my dad knew that I was really into Doom and knew that my mother hated it. but he was like, you know, he goes, yeah, we'll let's grab a shareware copy of this and take it home and give it a go. And I remember when we got it installed, it was crazy, because you'd seen that kind of stuff with like some of the flight games before. But you'd never seen it with FPS. And it was still weird because you were still trying to do the mouse and keyboard look up and down and everything. It felt natural at the time, but like retrospect, it's like, that's so alien.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Yeah.
It's like torture in Chinese prisons.
So bad. But the second that we got it fired up and it's all software rendered and everything, I was blown away. I sat there for hours playing that, and it was just something magical. It was exactly what Doom did for me. They hit it out of the park twice before, and they did it again. That was a magical team, man.
So was Doom actually your first FPS, or did you play Wolfenstein before that? Where did you start exactly?
Actually, my very first FPS was Doom. I did not start on Wolfenstein. Doom was shown to me by my Uncle Daryl up in Ohio. I was born in Ohio, and we went to go visit family, I think. Or no, we were still living there by that. No, we went to go visit family. It was like around 95. We had just moved down to Texas because my dad got some new job opportunities. And we went back to go visit family in Ohio, and I think it was 95, maybe it was 94, who cares. And we go over to their house because they got this really nice big house at the time, had a nice big basement, and they were doing okay for themselves. And he fires up Doom while he's looking over, like they just dropped me off at his house, and he fires up Doom. He's like, hey, have you played Doom? He's like, this is like the new big thing. And he was kind of like a tech head at the time for sure. And he sits me down and just, he's like, this is forward, this is back, this is left, this is right, and this is fire. And if you want to open doors, it's this. And I was like, well, I don't know anything that you just said, but here we go. And I just remember the title screen And I was like, whoa, that's some cool art, like, you know, at the time. Huh. And because the only thing I'd been introduced to that was even close to that, that I had to like sneak around and find was Terminator 2. And that was like whenever my brother's friends would rent it and I'd like sneak over in the corner and watch it like while they were watching, you know, like the weird guy that's delivering milk in the porno, like, you know, just kind of creeps through the, looks through the door. But yeah, like I only had like 30 minutes to play it, but it was one of those moments where everything clicks. You're like, yeah, this is absolutely what entertainment should be. Like, this is perfect. And mm-hmm. I got through, I think, two or three levels and just went through again and again and again. Like, I'd start it over, hit new game, and just go back to the first one and go over it again. And yeah, man, like, I don't know. Like, I went home and got a shareware on one of those PC Gamer magazines that came out like a few months later. And I think like a year later, I saved up my money and got the, I think it was, by that time, I think it was the Ultimate Doom. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I bought that and yeah, man, it was, gosh, it's hard to remember some of that stuff these days, like getting older. That sounds terrible.
Well,
it's true though.
Yeah. And you know, the thing is, it's such a visceral experience that it stays with you, you know, at least your first experience, or at least my first experience definitely stayed with me, both with Wolfenstein, Doom, and then Quake. I was totally a nut job by that point. So I was just obsessed and waiting, you know, with everybody else to download the shareware when it came out that day. So, but yeah. And I'm old, so the memories stay, I promise.
Yeah, thank God.
So moving on from Doom, you jumped to Quake, and then just curious to know, at what point were you like, man, I really dig the music in these. I think I'm going to start doing music. Did it start with you in bands? Like, how did that all come about?
It started a long time ago, but it never was intended to be a profession. Like, it started kind of with Doom and Duke and me asking the question and never really getting an answer, because you know, none of my friends know any of this stuff. Is just going, why is the music in these games? Why is it like all weird synthesizer sounds? Why don't we have anything that's like hard hitting behind this? Like, why can't we put like, you know, a band soundtrack behind some of this? Because, you know, lightly some of that sounded pretty similar. Mm-hmm. And nobody had an answer because I was talking to a bunch of 8-year-olds. like as time went on, I started figuring out, oh, you know, they only had this much room that you could put on a floppy, or this much room that could go with the executable, or, you know, that kind of stuff, or writes, you know, today it's writes. But
the technical limitations are gone now, but yeah.
Yeah, but the lawyers will still always be there. Mm-hmm. the thing that really got me was years down the road, like after you figure out, hey, these are the limitations, you just kind of like, okay, roll with it, whatever. Years later, hearing real music start showing up in games. Not discounting anyone's work before that. What I mean is like stuff that wasn't intended for games, but then got put into it. Like music from musical artists that then licensed the stuff over. I think a good source of that is Carmageddon with Fear Factory. So the second I heard, that was the first time I got introduced to Fear Factory, was through Carmageddon. And it's like, what is this? This is weird and it's all abstract, but it's also metal as fuck. What is going on here? And that was one of the turning points where I was like, okay, this is an actual mix with real drums, real guitars, and a real bass player that we're all cut in a studio. I'm getting more interested now. But yeah, and you fast forward to 2010. Touring locally regularly, and when I say local, I mean like going down to Austin, San Antonio, sometimes up to Oklahoma, and if we get to a trip over to Louisiana with a band I was in at the time, it was just me and a bunch of friends, and we were doing pretty well for ourselves. We were doing okay. the money wasn't ever really there, but you know,
right. That's how it goes, right?
Yeah. But we were having fun. And, I came across a Duke Nukem 3D remake in the Unreal Engine, on the Gearbox forums. And this was right around the time that there was a bunch of stuff swirling around about Duke Forever and if it was actually ever going to happen, because everybody knew that Gearbox had the rights, but nobody really knew what was going on at that time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, this guy named Frederick who was working on this by himself, just, trying to create like basically set pieces for the levels in Duke 3D. And I was like, wow, that looks really good. Like he had like the rooftop in Hollywood Holocaust and everything kind of started to be set dressed, and he was taking photos of that as well. And I got in contact with him through the Gearbox forums and I said, hey, you know, if you want, like Duke's one of my favorite games, I wouldn't mind trying to take a stab at like recreating the theme or something like that for you for this, if you want. And he's like, yeah, that would be really cool. And like, literally that's how this all started, was just that.
Wow.
And yeah. I remember, the second that I posted that, dude, there was somebody there, and I didn't mean to. I guess I stepped on their toes, who was pissed that like there was another musician that like I guess applied for it. You know, the mod community is a real tight knit group of people, but he was just anytime I would comment on something, he was not happy. But anyways, mm-hmm. I sent over a couple mixes for the Duke Nukem 3D Reloaded stuff, which is what it came to be called. And it seemed to work out really well. He really liked it. And the other guys that had been brought on from the team really dug it as well. By the way, everybody that worked on this team all went on to work, like for almost all of them went on to work AAA. Like it's freaking crazy.
That is nice, yeah.
With this one tiny team that was working on this game. One of the guys that was writing music is now writing music for Cyberpunk, and he did all the Witcher games, and like, it's wow. Crazy. Yeah. But anyways, sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. the stuff with the way it came to be was I handed him that theme, and then he said, hey, can you do some more tracks for us? It's like, yeah, sure, no problem. So I started doing a couple of the levels. One of the first ones was remake the Hollywood Holocaust track, which was super cool. Came out really well. And the fact that it came out so well really intrigued me, because I was like, I'd never had a mix that I did with my own music where I kind of get out of my chair a little bit and like kind of like, damn, you know, this fucking works. Like, you know, yeah, like I'm like, yeah, this is good. And awesome. Yeah, not to toot my own horn or anything like that. Like, that's yeah, not what this is. But like, it's just, it made me move. And that was something that even my music with like the band and everything, I think it was because I was desensitized to it, because I was around it all the time and I played it for people. This was just me. This was just my ideas. This was just, you know, everything distilled down into one little vial and here you go. And it came out really well. It came out so well that Scott Miller got onto the comment section and was like, hey, I really like this mix. I'd like to talk to you about it. I'm like, okay. he got on Facebook, like after I'd posted it there, I guess, cause somebody, like a handful of people shared it. And this was back before like privacy concerns or anything. And he drops his fucking phone number on Facebook. He's like, call me, like, wow, just in the comments.
Call me.
I was like what in the world is going on? And I called him and he was like, I really like this. He's like, the there's a couple things I think it would suit it a little bit better. And I was like, okay, yeah. And I remember he was pretty skeptical about the Duke 3D project at the time. He's like, you think the team can actually do what they say they're gonna do? I was like, yeah, I don't see why not. You know, looking back on it, if I knew what I did now, I'd be like, probably not. You know, oh, man. It's like six people. And it's like, yeah, let's do all the interactivity you possibly can.
Oh,
that, you can do that in a weekend, right?
Yeah, no problem. Got it.
Yeah.
But what a great compliment to give yourself, though, because, you know, as an artist, like I work as a graphic artist in my real job, and for you to actually step back and go, I really like what I'm doing right now. I'm feeling this is a lot, you know, because most artists really hate the work that they're doing, or at least by the end of it, they're kind of over it, you know? So that's great to hear that that's kind of where that went.
Yeah, totally. Like, I mean, you can always pick your shit apart, like all the time, like, right. Yep. Like with your art, mm-hmm. you can always sit there and just go, hate this. This is whack. This has got to go. And
yep.
or it just feels unfinished, even though it's finished. But with this, it just felt right. Like, I don't know. Like, I just felt at home, and I just gave him the track and it just fit perfectly. We used it for the internal use of deathmatch maps, and everybody really, really dug it. And still to this day, some of those team members are just like, God, dude, if that ever made it into a Duke game, it would do so well. You just need to remix a couple things. I'm like, yeah, I know that kick and snare don't hold up worth a damn. Like, but, you know, everything else is okay. But yeah, like, I like it. And back to what you were saying with artists not liking their stuff. I think it's really, really important to sit down and be honest with yourself and say, I'm not going to be batting 1,000 at all times. I will sometimes, but if I like what I'm working on at the end of the day and I think it's acceptable, then I should just cut the cable right then and there and then hand over whatever I've got. You know, it's really hard to give away your baby to somebody and be like, here's my child, you know, judge him. But because that's what the audience is, right? Like, we're just exactly, you're just handing your kid over. You're like, you're on the mountaintop, you're like, what do you think of this, you know? then there's always the guy that's like, it's fucking bullshit. You're like, no, you don't get to see another one, you know, man. it's important just to, number one, grow thick skin with it. You know that. But number two,
yes,
just
definitely.
Know that there's a stopping point. I'm sure you know that as well. But, you know, just for any listener out there that's creative, it's important shit. You got to get over it, and you got to just roll with it, you know?
Yeah. No, I think that's a great lesson. You got to get over the perfectionism, because if you don't, you'll never finish anything and you'll never be happy with it.
Yeah your right. Creativity will just, it'll just go down the toilet, like, immediately.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you'll exhaust yourself, too. You'll be sitting there like, I've been working on the same thing for 5 weeks now. I can't finish. You know, it will kill you for sure.
It's where those Photoshop memes come from. Final 2, 3, 4, 8 dot.
You know, right.
The very
right.
last one. Yeah.
Whenever I'm an editor, you know, by day, you know, and whenever someone puts final on something, I shake my head because it's literally never final.
I still do that with mixes sometimes, and I'm like, the second I hit enter and it's mixing down, I'm like, that's bullshit, and I know it. Like,
yeah.
Right.
And you'll remember something like, oh, I left that filter off or something.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or I have the wrong, like, for me, it's like I have the wrong date on the slate or something stupid like that, as I have to start all over.
Oh my God.
My God. Yeah. So going from there though, Andrew, I mean, your credits have just like skyrocketed. I mean, you have worked on all of these great FPSs and action games that have been coming out over the past 8 years. You know, resume includes, you know, the recently released Dusk and Amid Evil, but also Quake Champions and Rise of the Triad remake and stuff. Like, there's all kinds of great stuff here. So, I mean, how did you go from what you were doing there and then launch into doing id Software and 3D Realm stuff?
Luck.
Yeah, right.
seriously, like, there's a lot of luck there. I think that, you know, having the right mix and being able to vocally sell yourself helps a lot. Like, you know, even if it's fake, even if, like, because I really don't like talking about like myself much. You know, everybody likes to talk about theirself. I do to a degree, but I don't know how to take a compliment, and I'm kind of weird about sharing my art sometimes. It's, you know, bad profession to be in.
Yeah, right.
But a lot of it is luck, and some of it has to do with your talent, and a lot of it is also selling yourself to these people. You're the right person for the job. It's a difficult thing to do. Thankfully, I worked in sales for like a quarter of my life, and I can kind of be charming when I need to, you know, like when you're talking to the right people. And I think that helped a lot. But having a good product to show to those guys as well is super important. That's the biggest one. But yeah, we went, it was just being shot out of a cannon, man, because we went from Duke 3D, like the whole just fan remake thing, to that getting shut down by Gearbox. Basically, can't get too far into that, I don't think. Oh, we probably can, but whatever. That got shut down by Gearbox, and like immediately afterwards, Apogee Software calls Frederick, and it's like, hey, we've got an IP that we want to reboot. We just need to find somebody who has a little bit of funding, and we think we might have somebody. And I was still part of the team at that point. We weren't getting paid anything. We were just, you know, modders having fun. Which is, that's the core basics, man. That's how you cut your teeth.
Yeah.
And I just remember getting an NDA, like, just thrown directly into my email, almost with no pro bono. It just showed up. And I was like, what is this? You know, I'd never seen a non-disclosure agreement before in my life. And signed it and got a GDD back for Rise of the Triad. And I was like, no way. Like, what? You know, I was like, are they really about to reboot this thing? Like, this is cool. But there's no way that this is reality. You know, this is what I was thinking. Like, I played this a lot back in the day, like a ton. And there's no way that I'm about to step from a modding team to rewriting the soundtrack, because number one, that's like, there's just a lot going on there. Like, Lee just kind of let loose and was like, whatever, here we go, here's all the music you can handle, get used to it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's like all the notes all at once.
Wow.
And
that's funny.
And number two, it's like, that's a, I mean, it's not a huge IP, but it's a really big one, like, that people remember. If like, with our audience, with right. like the FPS audience, like everybody that remembers OG Doom, OG Quake, there's a little bit of Rise of the Triad in there too, just because of how violent it was and how weird it was at the time. So, I signed that NDA, looked at the GDD, and started writing music for it. And the first things I handed over to him got criticized super heavily. And I was like, well, this is how it's going to be. Okay. I'm going to listen to their feedback and do this rather than get all upset and butthurt about it. So I did. And the next thing that I made for them was, they loved it. And I think I gained a little bit more of their trust from there. And they just kind of let me go after about two tracks and getting all the kinks worked out. But after that, it was literally just a snowball effect. Rise of the Triad made some money, so we have this new project that we want to do, that we want to have you over here. It's it's an isometric Duke game that will that will get sued in a few months.
Oh no. did you really like, how severely were you concerned, or you just were like, no, I'm going for this, I don't care, it's not my problem?
I was a little concerned going into it. I think the entire team was, but we also had there was some, we were going off faith on some of this. I can't get into it too far, but there was documents there that I believe should have held up in a court and worked to a degree. I, you know, I'm not a lawyer. That could be complete bullshit. Like, but but there were certain things with that game that, when I asked, are we actually going to be able to do this? Because I thought that Gearbox had all the rights to it. It's like, well, when they signed the agreement, this was also in the agreement. And I can't tell you what that was, but I was like, okay, that changes things.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. So I was like, okay, this is going to go one of two ways. You know, like, as in my head, this is either going to go really well and no problems, or we're going to get snagged along the way and shit's going to roll downhill and we're going to have to figure something out. And, you know, dude, you know how the story goes from there. But it was, we went from project to project to project. I went from Rise of the Triad to Bombshell to Rad Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
And right after Rad Rogers, I think, was when Interceptor was, I think, about to close their doors and start under a new name. It's because they wanted to do like a big rebrand and stuff.
Right.
But right after that, I do remember that was right after Rad Rogers was a big turning point for me, like in my career and me personally. Because
and what do you think that was?
I absolutely know what that was. That was them closing their doors and the safety net going away and your month-to-month check going away. And then basically it's, hey, fight or flight, you know, motherfucker.
Yeah.
if you really want to start writing soundtracks and you really want to start doing this, you're going to have to do this as a 1099 and you're going to have to start rubbing shoulders with people, which means get your liver ready because you're going to go out in public a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So,
you gotta get your big boy shoes and your tie and all that crap.
Yeah pretty much because I'd been under a company net all the way until then. Like, I was just getting monthly payments. I was the sound and music guy for Interceptor / 3D Realms, and I was ready. Like, honestly, it was the right time. I was ready to start doing this stuff just by myself. Mm-hmm. And on my own. And but I was also scared, dude. Like, oh my God, I was so scared. I hope I'm not like going off the beaten path here. I'm just kind of taking you along from project to project.
No, I like this. This is actually awesome.
Good okay. stuff.
I was really scared because all I could think was like, these are all people that like basically were my friends, and now I don't have anywhere to really go at the moment, and I'm just mm-hmm. gonna have to figure this out. And I'm going to have to meet new people. Well, it just so happened that another one of my friends gives me a call that I hadn't worked with since Rise of the Triad, which was Dave Oshry. And he's like, I think I have something that would be really, really down your alley. And I can't tell you what it is. He's like, but just sign right here and I'll show you. I was like, okay, all right, whatever. And Dave and I had like a little bit of a rough past lightly. He had a lot of criticism for the Rise of the Triad soundtrack, and I kind of was like, motherfucker, threw it with him a little bit. But he did help make it better. Like, I will 100% give him that. Because anytime that he heard something, or here's the thing, anytime Dave hears something or sees something that he doesn't like, Dave won't sugarcoat it. He'll just be like, yeah, double kick there, not working. And it's just like, it's the way it comes off. You're like, motherfucker, like, really? Like, <Yeah. laughs> like, but it's honest. And the second that you can filter that through, you're like, oh, this guy you just have to see it from his perspective. Like, he's just one other person who has a million other people behind him who thinks, who probably hears it the exact same way. But anyways, he got a hold of me and he's like, I got this thing that I think you'll be interested in. It's called Dusk. And okay. And he shows it to me. And I remember the first thing I thought was, wow, this looks a hell of a lot like Quake. Like, and like even those alphas, I was like, this is really cool. And the movement's already there. The movement feels really good. It doesn't feel like how Quake felt. Like, it feels like how I remember Quake feeling like.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it.
Yeah, yeah. It, like, and that was what was important to me. And that was like one of the first things I told him. I was like, the feel's right. I was like, because if I go back and play like regular Quake, it feels completely different. It feels like exactly how I don't remember it feeling, because it's been so long since I went back and played it, you know? David introduced some more speed to it, did some really easy strafe jumping bunny hop mechanics to it. to get your speed up if you wanted to for speedrunners. And like, this was all there, like at the very beginning.
Wow.
And Dave's just this quiet guy, you know, hey, we all get onto this Discord and he's like, yeah, I'm making this game called Dusk, you know. He's like, it's kind of an homage, and like, and David's over here, or Dave's over there, like, yeah, it's really cool. You should do the soundtrack for it, you know, like just trying to reel me in completely. And man, it was great. Like, it was just one endless mode, and it was a map that just had a big barn in it and some trees and some bushes, and everything was just running around, and it was just like endless waves. I don't think there was even a counter at the top. And the atmosphere was already there, the skybox was already there. Like, it just fit, man. Like, it's low res graphics, it's not, you know, all the textures aren't aligned, but I, at that point, I don't give a shit. Like, I could see where this was going,
right?
And it was actually on that call that I was like, hey, this shotgun's kind of nice, but I really am not the greatest fan. This is going to sound sacrilegious to anybody listening right now. I was like, I'm not the greatest fan of OG Quake shotgun. I was like, man, like, I just don't like it. Like, right there in the middle, like pushing back, it looked kind of weird to me always. Like, you should totally do the T2, like, I think it's 1887, where you get the flip thing going on, and you can put two of them there if you wanted to. And then he did it the very next day, and Dave was like, okay, now you have, you know, a producer credit. I was like, okay.
That's awesome.
So we went from there, and like, I would just throw out ideas every now and then, and it was like this big circle of trust. But yeah, I started that development cycle, and halfway through, or actually like a quarter of the way through, I started on a medieval as well. And a medieval was as Civi put it, interceptor refugees. It was me, Simon, and Leon, and they had this really crazy thing where they wanted to do like a, basically kind of like, it's closer to Doom than anything else, but it's also, it looks like, you know, Heretic Hexen kind of stuff.
So that's what I was going to say. Between those two soundtracks, I feel like the music couldn't be any different. Like, you have this real hard-hitting metal stuff in Dust, but Medieval almost gets like ethereal at certain times.
Yeah, they ran in parallel too, like those development cycles. So I'd start working on something early in the morning for Dusk, and then like late afternoon that night, I'd work on something for Medieval. So it's like huge contrast. And
wow.
Yeah, people have asked, they're like, whenever I tell them that, they're like, Jesus Christ, how'd you kind of go back and forth between that? I'm like, man, it's easy. Like, look at how different those two games are. Like, you gotta just, if they're completely stark differences, it's not very hard.
Right.
It's whenever they're kind of close is when it's like, it's whenever you start kind of walking along the razor's edge.
Yeah, definitely. Because I mean, if you're in the same mindscape for a game that has similar soundtracks, I mean, it's like, at what point, you know, is this track meant for this game versus the other game, right?
Yeah.
And you're working night and day, it sounds like, too. So you've got that kind of adrenaline thing where it pushes your brain in a totally different direction.
Dude, yeah. Well, not only that, but, you know, there was the drinking involved. But like, actually through all that, even with Dusk and a Medieval going in parallel, then we come up to Adam Pyle sending me emails about Quake Champions. And like, I'm already like pretty on pace with like, this is a lot of work right now. And
yeah.
Second, I get an email about, hey, you know, would you be interested in working with the Quake Champions team? I'm like, well, that's an email that I can't say no to. And I already have a lot of work on my plate right now.
Wow. Yep.
So like, all three of these things were going on at once at one point. I think I did tell Dusk and a Medieval though, for like a couple weeks. I was like, hey, I have a really big opportunity that I can't tell you what it is, but I need to just take a couple weeks off and give all my attention to this. And they're like, okay. It's like, oh, you'll know whenever the time comes. And they're like, okay, we trust you. So they were real cool about it.
I love it when you're busy like that, and you have like, 'cause I had my own business for a little bit and it got real busy at one point. And people, you tell people like, yeah, I'm just like slammed. And And they're like, oh, it's a good problem to have. Like, well, unless you're fucking like, me and you got to do it.
Right.
Yeah, and it's an opposite side of the spectrum. It's like, yeah, put my shoes on and see if you fucking say that then.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
But yeah, I wanted to point out with the development of Quake Champions, I don't, and you could correct me obviously on this, but I don't think the music came until much later after the game was released to like an early access type state, right?
Correct. Yeah.
So did they hire you at the beginning of development, or was it more like along the way they found you and had you do music?
I think it was like along the way. Okay. They already had Chris Vernon's work in there, which was like, you know, it's very Quake 1 ambient stuff. I really dug it. Like, yeah. I thought it was very fitting, but also, you know, they had their fan base that wanted like the Q3 style stuff going on too. So I think that's why they got a hold of me.
I think it worked out because those tracks, when they introduced it, I was like, yeah, like it's really, yeah. really fits, man. It came out really well.
Yeah. Like everybody was asking with that whole teaser thing with, I think it was the video where they showed the jibbing mechanics with mm-hmm. that's the one with Visor where they pull them all apart at the very beginning.
Yeah,
there's
yeah.
the music behind there, and I was like, oh, I can't say anything. Yeah, that was awesome.
That is great, though. You definitely have a style with what you're creating, though. I know earlier in the episode you mentioned Fear Factory, and you could hear that little, you know, start stop thing that Fear Factory has as a trademark in their sound. So I think when that trailer came out, a lot of people were like, I think this is Andrew. I'm pretty sure this is Andrew. So I think the cat was out of the bag before, you know, anybody said anything. So,
yeah, I got a bunch of DMs that I ignored after that. After that came out, I was like, ignore.
Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, dude, that's crazy working on three games at once like that. And one being this gigantic, you know, soon to be fully released AAA game, you know.
Yeah, that was nuts. And you know, I will tell you this, that was the easiest one to work on.
Wow.
Yeah. Champions was really easy to work on, and it was because of the creative director, Adam. Dude, that is the nicest man ever. Adam's great. Like when I think of people who I want to work with, as far as like a representative from a company, Adam's a really good one for working with third party contractors, like with id Software. He straight up told me, he was like, we're hiring you because of you. We don't want you to bend to, you know, our will with anything. We're just going to hand you some things and we want you to be you. And like, he made it real clear. He was, we are hiring you because of you. And I was like, oh my gosh. Okay, cool. Like he just handed me the basketball and said, go play, you know?
That's great.
And he gave me a list with each song. Each song, there was four things that he wanted in there. Me and him are into a lot of the same music. So a lot of these were real easy to make happen. Some of them, it was like, hey, I really want a piano here for kind of like the industrial side, like kind of like the melancholy industrial side of mm-hmm. things, without dropping names. I'm sure you can figure it out. We really want some in your face, kind of grindy guitars for this one. Yeah, it's stuff like that, and like, you know, looking for some vintage synth sounds, and man, it was a breeze, and I wish I could do it all over again. Like,
wow,
yeah, it was like Adam. He's just so nice,
and he trusts every time. You.
He did. That was a great badge for you. That was the big thing. Was like working with a creative director at id Software, whose, you know, parent company is Bethesda, whose parent company is ZeniMax, one of the biggest in the world, you know, like, yeah. as far as entertainment goes. And this guy is like, have fun. And they're like, okay. You know? So, yeah, I'd send them demos, and almost every time he's like, this is perfect. Keep going. I got virtually almost no kickback except for one track where he's like, sounds pretty good. He's like, I think that there's something else that could be explored here. And I went back and touched up on it, and he's like, oh my gosh, now we're getting somewhere. But like, everything was almost, yeah, good. Once I sent it, good, send, good, send, good. And like, there was barely any revisions. If there was,
wow.
I think I revised it more myself. Like, I was putting myself under an incredible amount of pressure for it.
So the finals were almost really final this time.
Yeah, I was staying up till like 2, 3, 4 in the morning, some nights on weekends, and like kind of getting into that loopy mindset, and also asking like former OG Quake developers, you know, what was your mind frame going into development on Quake? And, you know, they text me back, you know, well, Quake's about a lot of things to me. Here's what it is. Here's what it was to me. And I remember the last thing that I got before I started development with this, when asking all those guys, because, you know, you get a, it's kind of like asking the gods for permission to, for me, you know?
Right.
Like, was talking to Robert Atkins, who his best friend is Adrian Carmack. Talking to Robert Atkins and saying, you know, just, well, whatever you got, whatever Adrian thinks that this game was about, can you just ask him to just, you know, give me any kind of input with it? And he was like, yeah, sure. And he came back, gave me a big list of things that were, that Adrian based his art around. And he's like, oh, there's a lot of Hellraiser in there. There's a lot of this, there's a lot of that. And it's also kind of all in your head is where Adrian was at with the art. You have to find a way out of your own head. And I was like, it's pretty heavy. He's like, yeah, he's like, think about, man, I can't remember exactly how the text went, but it was like something like, think about being inside your own mind with all of your terrible dreams, and the only way to get out is to put a pistol in front of your face and pull the trigger, but you don't know that that's going to save you. And I was like, wow. Jesus Christ.
Oh, whoa, dude. Yeah.
But I don't know if that was Adrian's exact words, but that was, he said that that's what he got out of those, that kind of art, you know?
Wow.
Like, Adrian, he did some really dark art, and that guy's a genius as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, I agree. But I was going to suggest, I usually go for a walk. get out of my head. But
clear my head.
Well, here's the heaviest part is yet to come. The heaviest thing that I heard was was at the very end of the text message was Rob. Like, all these guys take their art very seriously, and I kind of take my music seriously, so I took this very seriously. He said, hey, you're working with an IP that has a lot of history, you know, take care of it, but also don't get lost in your own head, because, you know, with stuff like this, it can get dangerous when you start working on the darker stuff and you really get into it. And I was like, yeah, there's a lot of weight behind that, and I know exactly what you mean. And I feel like, to a degree, I did get kind of lost with that for a little while with Dusk and this. Like, it was like, how depressing can I get? How eerie can you get? And you just stay there. Your head just stays there. And with Quake, I think I was like, I was reveling in it at that point. I was just having fun. And I think it shows through a bunch of those action tracks and everything. But like at the tail end of Dusk, I was like, I have to fucking, we have to stop. Like, this is it's fun, but holy shit. Like, writing this kind of music at all times is, it's fun, but I need something else for like a year or so, and then we'll come back. You know?
Let me do Candy Crush 5 or whatever.
But yeah, that was some heavy shit, and I'm glad I got to get a little bit of words of wisdom from like two of the dudes from back in the day.
Yeah, definitely words to live by. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you're about due to do a game that's kind of bright and cheery, because I'm looking at the games that you have coming up, you know, Wrath, Aeon of Ruin, you're doing work for Proteus, you're doing work for another one called Nightmare Reaper, which are all, you know, scary FPS style games, you know? So I think you may be about due like a colorful 3D platformer or something at this point.
Yeah, maybe, we'll see. I think now I think I got over that whole thing I was just talking about with Dusk. I think I got over that a little bit, and I think now I've kind of pushed it off to where I can hold that at bay and just use it when necessary, rather than, you know, 24/7 thinking about how can I find new ways to make disturbing music.
Right.
Yeah.
And that kind of begs the question, is there Is there a genre or something that you do want to kind of lean towards? You know, is there something that you're not satisfied with right now?
I'm always open for new things. I think my entire career, there's been, you know, here's a couple metal tracks, and then here's your synthwave album. Here's a couple metal tracks. Here's your movie action album. Here's a couple synth, or here's a couple metal tracks, and here's your ethereal album. So yeah, I think it's like every couple of projects, I get something different to work on. And I think the next thing I want to kind of mess with is a little bit more in the aggressive nature of synthwave, maybe. Like, a lot of that really strikes a chord with me. I did a little bit of it on Rad Rogers for the boss stuff. Mm-hmm. But I'm kind of digging back into that a little bit with Proteus.
Cool.
And actually, to kind of talk about that for a second, I'm pretty excited about a track I just finished up last week or 2 weeks ago with them, where you're in a waste plant refinery. And I had just got done watching the Chernobyl series a few weeks before. And like, I don't know if y'all have seen that, but you really should.
Unbelievable. And the score is so mind-blowing.
You want to hear something crazy about the score? That score, like 90% of it is all sounds from inside a nuclear reactor.
Wow.
That's crazy. It's nuts. I'm like, oh my God, that's crazy. But that actually, that story inspired me, and I was like, oh, we're in a nuclear waste refinery. Okay, I'm going to find all the sounds I can of a Geiger counter and put that into a rhythmic tempo form. I'm going to find sounds of a nuclear reactor being turned on and turned off and put it through some filters. And I'm going to figure out what gamma radiation does to a camera once it's on and actually strip the audio from that. Wow. And then use that as a background synth as well. So I'm diving in further than I ever have with, I guess, set dressing via audio.
Sure.
Yeah. You know? So like each one of these tracks, I'm going to try and handle that same way, where it's like, yeah, here's your level and here's your music that sounds like, you know, anything else I'd normally put out, but there's another layer. I'm now the Taco Bell of music composers. Here's your chalupa gordita crunch, you know.
You know what? Always tasty. Always tasty.
Excuse me, I'm gonna run for the border right now, guys.
But yeah, you get what I mean.
Yeah, totally. And it's interesting you talk about that for Proteus, because I wanted to ask you about your process for developing tracks. I mean, it sounds like you're kind of going in a new direction with Proteus, kind of implementing these different objects here to get sounds and get beats and that kind of thing. So do you think that this is going to be more your approach going forward, or is this more of an experimental thing for you?
I think it's an experiment, and it could turn into something that I do going forward. That's pretty much what every project is. Honestly, like I beat the ever living shit out of myself with each project on how can I, you know, top whatever I've done before, or, you know, maybe not top, but make something completely different that's just as good in a different way. And I'm sure that's what every composer ever struggles with, that and finding the first four bars. Yeah. I can only imagine Nick has to go through with AAA games with that. That seems like a beating, and I'm sure I'll be at that point sometime soon. But, you know, while I'm not there yet, like, you know, on a day-to-day working AAA, I'll thank my stars, you know. That's so much work. But anyways.
I got to ask, your guitar licks and everything in these tracks, I mean, that's you playing the guitar, right? Or is any of this digitally created, or?
No, yeah, yeah, that's all me.
Okay, awesome. And what do you play, just to ask?
I've got a, let's see, let me look over here. I've got a Schecter C6. I've got a Schecter baritone that was like a limited one-off from 2009 when they, like, I guess they started doing runs of baritones then, and I just saw one. And I was like, oh, this is what tuning down a regular guitar to B should sound like. I'll buy this. Nice. I've got a Schecter 7-string. I've got like all Schecters right now. I need to get an endorsement. Schecter Riot 5, and I just bought a Apocalypse E1 from them, which is like, it looks like the what am I thinking of? It looks like the Explorer that Hetfield ran around with for a long time.
The white Explorer?
It's all brown. No, it's the brown one.
Oh, yes, I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Yep.
The Ken Lawrence. It looks like the Ken Lawrence Explorer that he has, but it's like, it looks like aged green, which I really dug. I was like, oh, it's awesome. So that totally struck a chord with me, and I went and bought that. But yeah, I do play all the instruments. Every now and then, I will say every now and then, I will go in. If something's not clicking with me, I'll totally write out a guitar part like on a VST plug or something and run it through a reamp section. If I don't feel like it's tight enough, if I'm just like, I don't know what the problem is, I've doubled the tracks, what's going on here? This just needs to sound perfect. I'll totally go in and do that. Yeah. Because at the end of the day, it's about the end user feeling like there's punch there. But I mean, like, that's, it's like maybe 5% of the time that I'll do that. Nightmare gotcha. Reaper, I did it like 2 times and that's about it.
Okay. Yeah. And on your projects, how often are you actually working with other musicians? Like, do you work with drummers and that kind of thing? Or are you programming most of that?
Oh, I'm programming all of it.
Okay.
I've actually, it's funny you mentioned that. There's a handful of drummers around Dallas that I've become very good friends with that now I really want to like pay them for their time and have them come in. I'm like, hey, I just need you to play for, you know, 5-10 minutes at 120 BPM, and then we'll do 140, and then we'll do 160, and then we'll go back and we'll do it in triplets, and we'll go back and do it in dotted, and, you know, and like have all these different grooves from different drummers that I can just kind of grab if I wanted to. I've been thinking about doing that when I have some time, because while I'm a guitar player and a bass player and actually a vocalist by trade, like, I'm not a fucking drummer. I sit there and agonize over the drums. But, like, I try and program them and make them sound as good as I possibly can, because I know that if your drums aren't sitting right in the mix, it doesn't matter what you put down. Like, it's going to sound like shit.
Yeah. Yeah, it is completely... They're completely different schools of thought, drumming and playing guitar. So that's why I was curious, because some of the drum stuff you come up with is actually pretty amazing, considering that fact. You know, it's... when you're thinking about, you know, the drum beat versus like my guitar riff or whatever, it's like, yeah, I could do this cool 4/4 thing to it. But then when you're thinking about all the fills and everything else, it's like a completely different world.
Yeah, you have to like completely disconnect for a moment and be like, okay, what should we do here? Rather than snare, snare, tom, 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 you know, crash. Yeah, it's weird. You gotta start watching videos of drummers that have good fills, so anything other than old Metallica videos.
Right.
Wow. I'm sorry, Lars Ulrich.
He's been taking it for years.
I was processing that for a second. I'm like, did he just say that?
Don't get me wrong. Like, Metallica is one of my favorite bands. I really dig like almost all their records. But at the end of the day, I'm very much aware that Lars isn't the greatest drummer that's ever been around, but he holds everything together, right?
Yep. It's kind of like Ringo with the Beatles. When they came out with Rockstar Beatles edition, I remember everybody was ripping on Ringo. I'm like, he's a Beatle. How could you even say that about Ringo? Terrible.
But it's like you wouldn't have had what you had you not had Ringo. And plus, Lars handled all the business for Metallica, so you really wouldn't have had what you had without him, for sure.
It's a good point. It's a very good point.
Speaking of drummers, I just want to tell you really quickly, a buddy of mine is a composer, and he recorded a jazz artist, and he recorded a really awesome jazz drummer, did like, you know, whole like hour and a half session, and he took the drum tracks and composed music to the drum tracks, which is insane. So I'll shoot you a link for that, because I'd love for you to see that. It's really a really unique project. Very, very jazzy and kind of very kind of avant-garde stuff, but the video will explain how it all worked. But
that's cool.
Yeah, I'll send that to you. But the other thing is that like, what have you ever had that blank page day? Or do you have like, because I cannot believe your output, even though you've been doing this for 9 years, the amount of work that you've done just in the recent few years, are you just do you just have a spring in your step every single day? Are you like, or are there days you show up to the studio and just go, what am I going to do? How am I going to do this?
There's definitely days where I have no fucking idea what's next. and like, I'm just, you know, the thoughts roll in of you're a failure, you're a phony, hang it up. No, oh, man. For sure. Just, I mean, it's just like anybody else, who's ever written music that gets an opportunity with something, they'll go through the exact same thing. Everybody does. But yeah, like I definitely have those days and they suck, but now I'm at the age and I've done it long enough to where I go, okay, I'm not going to fucking waste my time with this. And then I just turn the computer off and I go do something that relaxes me, because that's the key, is whenever you're trying to force something, you're not going to get what you want out of it. But if you come back relaxed and you come back whenever an idea just kind of shows up in your head, you're always going to have fun with what your output is. Because the second that one idea shows up, whenever you finally get around to getting in the DAW, like getting in like Studio One or whatever and shaping that idea, by the time you're done with that, there's always a second idea that shows up. Always. Mm-hmm. So it's a snowball effect, and you get really excited at one point and you have to step back and walk away for a few days and then come back and check the pulse. You know, hi-hats too loud, kicks too loud, this part sucks, that kind of stuff. And it used to be I'd crank this stuff out all in 2 days, man. Like, sometimes even 24 hours. Rise of the Triad, some of those tracks I finished in 24 hours.
Wow.
Personally, just between us, I think it kind of shows on some of them. but like, you know, people dug it, and people dug the way I took some of Lee Jackson's writings and kind of interpreted them as well, including Lee. He said, I think you did a really good job. I remember him telling me that, and I was like, this is awesome. He still stays in contact with me about it. But yeah, I definitely have those days. And nowadays it's instead of like 24 hours to 48 hours, it's like, I'll give a track the attention of like a week and a half. Mm-hmm. And then I'll give it over to the developer just to make sure that everything's sound and it's up to quality control standards that I have set for myself, you know?
Yeah, totally. And it's yeah. Interesting you say that too about the tracks you kind of throw together within a day or two. And I've heard that story from bands multiple times about how, like, yeah, we needed one or two more tracks on the album, so we just threw these together, and they end up being the singles they release because
yeah.
They didn't put any thought into it. They just made them, and then boom, it was like raw inspiration, and people love those songs. So it's funny how that works out.
I think that was like, I think a pretty big version of that is one of those, I think it's Power Man 5000's first album, how they got signed. I mean, like, everybody's like, who the fuck is that?
Right.
They went into a studio, they only had limited time, and I think one of the last tracks they wrote was the one that they used for the single and the one that actually got them signed.
The Worlds Collide song?
I don't know if it was Worlds Collide. It could have been. It might have been Nobody's Real. I can't remember.
Yeah, that was a big song too at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, crazy how that works out. It's just so weird.
Right.
So now you are heading over to, I know it's just down the street, but you're going to QuakeCon this year. What's going on at QuakeCon? You're just going to sign autographs and get swamped by your fanboys? are you there pimping something specific?
No, actually this year is relax year. It's like the first year since 2014 where I get to just kind of be, just hang out with everybody.
Nice.
New Blood Interactive, like, Dave went out and like just bought us an entire row in the BYOC, so we're gonna go set up like the PCs and stuff that we got for like all the quality control guys, myself and David and Dave and I think who else is gonna be there from the team? I'm trying to remember. Lane will be there. I don't think Evane will be there this year, but yeah, like all the New Blood guys We'll be down there and we'll be at the BYOC, and we've got rooms there. And honestly, I just kind of plan on running around and just kind of shaking hands and hanging out with people and just, you know, just doing the regular thing. Like, yeah. I think it'll be fun. I don't have to stand around a booth, make sure that everybody gets a lunch sometimes. Like, to be perfectly honest, I'm kind of shitty at that anyways. Like, I'll show up for a couple hours and then I'm like, I'm going to take a walk. Like, just because I'm like, fuck, I can't stand in one place. Like, for an entire day, like, that wrecks me. It especially wrecks my my legs, for sure. I need to be moving a lot of the time. But yeah, it's just gonna be fun. If you're listening to this and you see me down there, just come over, shake my hand. Well, you know, I'll say hello. I don't bite, I promise.
Well, that being said, too, that kind of reminds me, we sometimes ask people, like, you know, do you have any advice for people who'd like to get into this? I mean, do you have any advice for people out there listening and that would like to at least attempt this? I know it's a numbers game and it's so competitive.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, I do. It's don't. The entire market's mine. Fuck off. I'm kidding. A lot of recording software now is you can get free versions of it. You should just absolutely go try those out. One that I use a lot is Presonus Studio One. You can get a free version of it, and it's got a lot of stuff loaded in with it. And just go crazy. Start recording at home. That's the biggest thing. Start recording at home. Get comfortable with mixing at home. And then you can start kind of start from there. Because learning a DAW is very much like learning an engine. So, you know, if you're familiar with Unity or Unreal Engine and what it took to get there, it's the same things.
Like, right,
you know, automation and getting levels correct and all that kind of stuff. But just have an open mind. Don't feel like you have to subject yourself to one genre, and always be looking for new music, and just always keep an open mind. That's the biggest one that I got, for sure. That was the one that helped me out, because going into it was all Metallica, Megadeth, Slayer, and then like halfway through was like Hans Zimmer, and, you know,
right,
like, right, we start, yeah, jumping way over, and now my musical taste has changed completely.
Hey everybody, this is RC. Just want to remind you to check out my YouTube channel at youtube.com/watchGGRC.
And this is Dump Truck, and you can find me by searching Dump Truck_DS on YouTube. And for a more multiplayer-centric podcast, please check out our friends at inthekeep.com.
Was there another note you wanted to add in for any plugs or anybody?
Okay. No. No.
Okay. All right. No need to get hot now.